Here on the Ron Van Dam Show, our policy is anything goes.
Do not twist my nipples.
Okay, almost anything goes. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you, thank you.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one in the middle. Hey, it's Thursday, which is the new Tuesday, which is the new orange. Welcome to the program. Sit down, shut up for a little while. For you a beverage? Would you like a soft drink? Not a hard one, a soft one. Or would you like a hard one? That doesn't sound right. Would you like a cocktail? Well, today's the day to do it. Get the kids out of the room. Go have them beat on a pot or pan or something, or play with a piece of cardboard, because the adults now are going to go for an adult swim. Our announcer, John Shanahan, joins us usually on a Thursday in order of, well, you know, he does the opening of the show, the comedy commercials, they what we call bumps in the business, not mumps, bumps. And he's actually a writer and comedian in his own right. And so we spend Thursday with him and we just sit down and chat about stuff, man. You know what I say? You know what I'm saying? Well, today's that day. So are you ready? Here we go.
And now we're drinking with Mr. Shanahan, drinking on the phone, drinking with Mr. Shanahan, so he don't have to drink alone again.
Yes, and here he is, Mr. Shanahan. John Shanahan joins us. Hello, John.
Hello, Ron. How are you?
Great, thank you very much. Well, the title.
Thanks for having me into your home.
Oh, that wasn't the original idea.
I think it's very strange that you've had me over here, and yet I have to sit in the other room on the phone.
Well, what can I tell you? Hey, ooh, good comeback line.
I promise that the herpes cleared up. It's okay. And I'm all right with no kissing this time.
Well, visuals are everything.
Yep.
Hey, segment is called Drinking with Mr. Shanahan, and it's
for a darn good reason.
Because that's his name. Yep. No, drinking is involved, ladies and gentlemen, and we're not saying that kids should be drinking at the age of five. What we're saying is that every once
Wait
in a while,
they're six.
Six is right. What are you sporting today? Excuse me for asking something so personal.
I'm sporting excitement. I don't want to disappoint you.
Uh-oh.
But because we ordered out this evening for the din-din because I forgot to pull anything out to cook.
Oh.
I just had a craving for a burger from a local place. And when you have the burger, got to have a beer.
Beer. Oh, my
gotta
God.
Have a beer. I've gone back here once again from my nearby brewery. I'm having a delightful pale ale.
Interesting.
And, it's nice. It's very citrusy and little hints of pineapple, perhaps, on the nose. And it's light. It's refreshing. I'm enjoying it.
Sounds like something that I can't do that. Not that I'm not allowed, but in public I cannot do that because it gives me a gaseous state, very simple, similar to Pluto and Uranus.
There you go. Like all beer across the board, you have to. So you have to be like a, like a liquor or wine kind of guy in public?
Kind of, sort of.
When you want to play the trumpet, so to speak, in your privacy of your own home,
mm-hmm.
you can pound down a little cold frosty and open up the pipes?
I can't because...
The pan flute of Ron?
I can't. I can't because it upsets me. I start crying.
Philosophically, why did I drink a beer? What was I thinking?
I don't enjoy it at all. I just don't enjoy it. Wow. But
that's really going to slow us down. You know, the times we've talked about how when breweries and things kind of reopen for general consumption, that I would bring you out and I would introduce you to the wonderful world of the craft beer, but. Not if it's going to make you cry in a corner and write poetry.
I can't do it. That's like.
And I read your poetry. It's not good.
I can't do it. I can't do it unless there's a lot of saltines involved, but even then, I really shouldn't. It actually sits in my stomach, and I don't know why we're talking about my physical problems.
Clearly it's bothering you and you need to get it off your chest in the public forum of the Ron Van Dam podcast.
Getting it off my chest isn't the problem. It is.
Blowing it out my ass is the problem.
it's a rough deal. I was a very gaseous kid. My parents told me that I was a colicky baby, which goes way back to entering the womb. I always had that problem. So, never left me through my entire life.
Some children bring greatness with them. You brought gassiness.
Yes, I should have been a scientist in a way, because I am a gaseous state, actually. You know, you find out after a while that your favorite planet is just a ball of gas. Hello, welcome.
I've drove through a gaseous state once. It was New Jersey.
Ugh. You know, I was brought up in New Jersey.
I know you were.
Yeah, yeah.
There is that marvelous moment when one drives down into that end of the world. My son and I, last 9 years, we take a couple of days and we go down to a place in Asbury Park, mm-hmm. New Jersey, mm-hmm. birthplace of Springsteen, and it's great. We've come to really love that area, that part of the Jersey Shore. But when you come across, like, the George Washington Bridge, and as you kind of get toward Newark, and no offense to all the New Jerseyites out there, but that's when it's really time to roll up the windows and turn on the AC. Because there is that stretch, that first stretch of, like, northern New Jersey that you come through down 95, it can pack a pretty interesting olfactory wallop. Mm-hmm. It doesn't smell pretty.
It's as a child, it was worse. That's when the that manufacturing down there and the meadowlands and the Suffern, New Jersey area, it was like rotten eggs, like a chicken had died in its own egg. It was horrendously horrible. What you smell now is a minute percentage of what it used to be. It was just awful.
A bunch of years ago, mm-hmm. We had my ex-wife's parents had a place down in Florida, and we flew down and we were heading down there. But we landed like kind of up near the corner of Georgia and Florida, and we had to take a bus to get somewhere, like to another. I don't even remember how it worked, but the guy that was driving the bus or whatever, or leading this group, was giving us points of interest as we went along. And he said, "We're about to go by the Tyson chicken processing plant." He says, "I tell you this because you're going to smell it before you see it." And everyone's like, "Oh yeah. Okay. Whatever. You know, smell like chicken." Uh-huh. And we came up toward this place, and there was the most indescribably awful stench.
Really?
That you could not get away from. It was like death and feces and more death by feces. And it was this awful smell coming off the chicken processing plants.
Oh my God.
And it was probably one of the most atrocious things ever to hit my nostrils in my life.
I have a follow-up question.
Yes.
how did you ever eat chicken again?
By not thinking about that moment for many years.
That's horrendous.
Yeah, it was horrendous. Unbelievable. And of course, you know, the guy that was telling us this, of course, is laughing his butt off because, you know, he has to go through this several times a day, so he's probably immune to it by now. Like, oh, I'm going to watch the tourists start to puke.
Wow. That's incredible.
I'll tell you another story.
Uh-oh.
I'll tell you another story coming back to New Jersey because talking about Newark and this drive down made me remember the very first time that I drove down that way. I had lost a job, but they had given us severance, and so I had some money, and I was a young single gentleman, and I just decided I was just going to take a drive. I was just, you know, I was going to go somewhere, and I had money for a hotel, and I was just going to just drive along, whatever. And so I come over the GWB, and I'm coming down into New Jersey, and I'm coming down through Newark, and there's this horrible traffic jam, and I'm just sitting there. I'm like, oh, this is terrible. And I look up out of my window, and my front windshield, and I see off in the relative distance there is an airplane, and it's like approaching. Oh, that's interesting. I'm sitting in my car listening to the radio. I'm waiting. I look up, and again, that plane's getting really close.
Oh my God!
It's getting really low. And I'm looking around, and like no one else seems to be panicking quite as much as I am. And the plane is getting lower, and it's getting closer. And I'm worried that I've managed to park myself somewhere where a plane is about to crash, and I'm going to die right now. Wow. Because this thing is coming so low. I hadn't realized I was next, because I wasn't looking around. And I didn't know the area. I didn't realize I was next to Newark International Airport. And so this plane comes over the highway. For those of you who've never been down there, probably no more than 150 feet over the highway. Uh-huh. And it just, I'm praying. And I remember that I was recording things into a handheld tape recorder at the time, you know, because I was all writerly or some shit. And I was trying to, you know, get my observations and be very, you know, in the moment, very Spalding Gray. And I remember I was recording things like in case I died as this plane decided to come barrel-assing down the highway.
That's some scary-ass stuff. The only thing that would have been scarier is if it was nighttime.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine those lights coming at you? I mean, that would have been you might have died just thinking about it.
I was kind of bummed. The first time I took my son down there, as we got to that area, I was hoping like, oh, please, I hope a plane is coming down the highway because it's going to freak him out.
Well, there you go.
I could have played that one off all day.
Careful what you wish for. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, New Jersey is a funny place. The two famous people that came from New Jersey, I did not enjoy to the point where I just can't stand their music. And of course, originally that's Frank Sinatra. I think he's the most talentless vocal piece of crap I've ever heard in my life. He doesn't even sing. He just, and I went to the store. It's just awful. He's just a horrible singer. And yet, I think if you didn't like his music, he would send people out that would kill you. And the other person that is a horrible singer, now famous because of New Jersey and vice versa, is Bruce Springsteen. Never enjoyed his music. Sounds like he's about to lay an egg every time. He's just awful. He's just an awful, awful vocalist. I don't know what it is about New Jersey, but they famous people that I don't really find very humorous or great talents. Find them humorous. What does that mean?
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
Going back to Sinatra for a moment, another Mr. Shanahan story. As you may recall, many years hence, I lived in Cambridge. Uh-huh. You visited there. We
yes, I did.
Sent us up there.
Yes, we did. Yes.
And as it turned out, the little neighborhood that we lived in, actually a place called Strawberry Hill, was very, very... It had been like an Italian neighborhood for years, and I guess there was still a lot of Italians there. And in the summer, they would do like a little street festival, which was awesome. You know, it was only like a block long, but But, you know, all the food was just unbelievable. I mean, sausages as far as the eye could see, you know, ricotta pies, like everything you could want, you know. It was fantastic. The downside was that they also had, like, from 8 to 11 or something, they had karaoke. And about every third person who got up sang a friggin' Frank Sinatra song because it was an Italian neighborhood, and I guess they just wanted to pay homage to the chairman. The number of times, and we lived around the corner, and it was summer, so naturally, you know, our windows are open. We're young, we're broke, we don't have air conditioning, and so you can't get away from it. It's, you know, it's every badly crooned karaoke Sinatra you've ever had in nightmares.
Yeah.
And of course, interspersed with old women singing Patsy Cline.
Wow.
Because that's the other thing that you do at karaoke at the Italian festival. It's either Frank or it's Patsy. So you're either loving New York or you're crazy. There's no in between.
Yeah,
it's over and over again.
Yeah, that's karaoke for you. I mean, it's just a horrible. Anyway, I'm actually drinking wine tonight, Johnny.
You are?
Yes, I am.
I'm very proud of you. What are you drinking? Tell me, and I'll tell you what you don't know about it.
Well, you don't have to tell me. I know nothing about it. I know it's. I was talking about last time. I love wines from Argentina. Even though politically, they're in an uproar right now. But, it's an Argentinian wine. It's a red. That's about all I know about it. And I drink it, and it tastes dandy. I got to tell you, again, wine just doesn't really do it. Again, acidic, not good for my body. And it doesn't do it for me. I don't know what it is.
You end up like unsatisfied after you've had a glass of wine. You're like, oh, I expected so much more.
Yeah. Well, I see these ladies drinking it and some guys too. But the ladies seem to get very tipsy and the guys just go, yeah, what's the big deal here? I don't know. What is, there's like tolerance for wine on a female it seems to be a little bit different. I know that's sexist and it doesn't sound right, but that's my observance.
Well, I suppose if you had a thin, mildly anemic man, it would be a problem for him too.
I suppose so. Maybe I haven't been with, I haven't seen a thin anemic man in quite some time.
I've known some ladies that can put away the vino.
Really?
Yeah.
But don't they get a little happy about it every once in a while?
Well, match a glass for glass. I mean, everybody gets a little happy after wine. That's why St. Jesus invented it.
Excuse me?
That's why St. Jesus invented wine. So he could be happy.
Are we talking about the same Jesus that is in the books?
Yeah, same Jesus, yeah, sure.
Okay, fine.
He invented a lot of stuff. He invented the internet, it's true.
He was a carpenter, you know.
Yes.
I have
Jesus invented carpentry.
Yes, he did. I have one of his bureaus in my bedroom.
An original?
I would
have. He's on Antiques Roadshow.
It ain't a knockoff, baby. Yeah, I know. Oh, I love that show, Antiques Roadshow. Oh, I
and
love
if you look
show.
Here on the bottom, you can see it says Christ underneath. This is he would only stamp it in the left corner, so this is authentic.
What's it worth?
Well, it's in perfect condition. This would be worth about $27.50. That's $27.50.
Wow.
But you seem to have set your coffee down on the top of it, and left a small ring here. You can see the ring, which devalues it slightly. It's now worth $12.14. But it's a Christ.
Watch it. Yeah. It's funny because when people say, I found Jesus, they actually found one of his pieces of furniture, is what happens there.
I found Jesus at a yard sale.
Right. I don't know. You would figure. I don't know.
I do think it was very funny when that show really first like started catching fire, you know, and it was everywhere. And, you know, and they were showing everyone, you know, where to look for things. And of course, every great story on that show is, well, you know, I was at a rummage sale in Cleveland. You know, I was digging through my grandmother's remains after her cats had eaten her. So, like, I remember when my wife and I were moving out of Quincy, town south of Boston, ladies and gentlemen, if you're from state. You know, we put some stuff out, and the number of people who, like, came to buy our plates but would pick them up and look at the bottom.
Really?
In, you know, in case, you never know, what if there was the mark that showed it was an original Le Fondue, and, you know, it could be worth more money. Like, people looking on the backs of paintings.
Yeah.
like I can guarantee you that that's nothing. That's what that came from Target. It was on sale.
Hmm. Interesting. But that was because of the show, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Suddenly everyone thought that everything they would find at a yard sale was going to magically be worth a fortune. Yeah. Like, oh, yes, that's a Cezanne that I got at Kohl's.
Yeah.
It's probably worth a million.
It's an amazing thing. For those that aren't familiar, and nobody really is, John and I used to do a segment on a TV show called Yard Sales.
And
we would go to people's houses with a camera there. We had a camera guy. And we would just look at the various items and kind of make fun of them. And in retrospect, people must have thought we were crazy. Who does this?
Yep. Yep. The thing I always loved about it too is we'd roll up with our camera, and you know, of course, we would say, "Do you mind if we? You know, we're doing a thing for a local cable show. Mm-hmm. Can we take video of some of your stuff? Oh, yeah. Just don't show me. I don't want to be on camera. Don't show me.
Exactly.
And as soon as we would start doing it, like 8 out of 10 of them would kind of wander over in camera shot. You know, yeah, you know what you're looking at there? Those are my softballs from high school. Right. I used to carry them in my shorts, actually. You can have them for 12 cents.
Yeah. That was a funny part of it, because we were making fun of their stuff. It was a comedy routine. And yet they never seemed to get it. They always thought that we were actually from a news station looking at items. I said, no, you don't understand. We're making fun of you.
you and your collection of 8-track tapes.
Right. It was a fascinating piece of society there, because a lot of those places, there'd be like 10, 20 cars, you know, in front of the yard sale. It's like, the hell's going on here? What planet am I on? What are people doing going through other people's junk?
When I was a kid growing up, there was a guy that I went to high school with, and his dad, from spring through the end of fall, that was like his side hustle. Mm-hmm. Is that he would go around to yard sales, and he would, you know, he'd buy stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talk people down to what they're asking, you know, it's a buck, I'll give you 25 cents for it. Okay, people want to get rid of it. And then he'd put it out on his lawn, like, the next weekend, and sell it at a profit. And this guy did this for years.
Wow.
And from what I understand, actually made some pretty decent money.
Really?
Yeah. You know, because people don't, you know, not going to ask, hey, where'd you buy this? So the Johnson's house? No, this is an original. you know, people aren't going to stop and ask, and they don't know, you know. And the great thing is, if you bought something at a yard sale for $3 and you put it out on your lawn for $10 and somebody kind of talks you down to $6, they think they got the deal and you've actually made $3 on it.
It's fun. It is literally junk. People actually offer you money for your crap. It was a phenomenal thing to see. Unbelievable. Although
when my son was young and we would, like, cause I love a good yard sale, because I think it's kind of left over from what you and I used to do, because I used to just love that energy, that comedy energy of going and finding a thing and coming up with a bit around it. It was very improv based, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You'd see a thing and I gotta just, Mike, come here, get the camera going, I get a bit. So it was a great kind of, you know, just a creative moment.
It was.
I've just always loved going to them anyway, because I am fascinated by the things that people have, because I want to know whether it was something that they bought for themselves and then realized that they didn't need or like, or how many of these things are shitty gifts that they're just trying to get rid of, like never came out of the box.
Odd. So now you have to pay people to take the, to all the stuff away.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't want this anymore. Take it with me. Yeah. But I was going to say, when my son was small, on Saturdays and the weekends that I had him at my house, you know, we'd go out, drive around, and we would, you know, we'd occasionally hit a yard sale, which, of course, taking a four-year-old into a yard sale, you know, you're not walking away empty-handed anyway. But I always referred to them with him as junk houses. Like, do you want to stop at this junk house, buddy? Yeah, Dad. Can we go to the junk house? I'm like, yep.
Really?
Like, that's nothing. Meaning. It wasn't a yard sale. It wasn't a tag sale. It wasn't a garage sale. It was a junk house.
Wow.
Come on, buddy. We're going to get out of the car and go to this junk house and see what they got.
Jeez. It's so fresh for comedy. You can just point to somebody's wife and say, how much for her? Yeah. I also remember
seeing things like, do you remember there was somebody had a nutcracker?
Yes.
In the shape of a woman, where you would put the nut between the legs. Yes. And then basically crush the walnut with this woman's thighs.
Yes.
Which is both horrifying and erotic at the same time. Actually, and also carries with it, who gave this to you thinking it was okay? Thinking, yes, you know what? Jim likes a good joke, and he's a misogynist. Let's get him this nutcracker.
Wow.
His wife won't mind.
You know, oddly enough, if someone manufactured that today, gold mine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm serious. That's a great novelty item.
I'm sure they're still out there somewhere.
The Nutcracker, man. Yeah, let me ask you a question here, because I was pondering this.
I have, on my
computer-o-rama, I have this thing called Web Plaza. Sounds like a porno site, but it's not. And it's very similar to, what do you call that stuff where you can see Times Square and all that, you know, the live shots of Times Square, just people walking by. What do they call it?
Oh, it's like a live game, a streaming
game. Yeah, exactly. So they have it for restaurants, and I find it fascinating because it's restaurants around the world. It's Croatia and all that stuff, and, you know, it's fascinating. There's a web.
You look into restaurants around the world?
Yes, I do. Yes, there are webcams in the ceiling. I don't think the customers know that they're there, but they are fixed webcams, and you see people eating dinner and bars drinking and things like that. It's fascinating stuff. It's called
Web. You can never again tell me that I am boring, because I will play this trump card every time. You can tell me I'm doing something as dull and go, Ron, you watch people in Croatia eat in restaurants.
Johnny, I'm telling you something. Web Plaza, once you look at it and you're looking at people eating in Croatia, you will say, Van Damme was right. This is fascinating. Now, of course.
So you just like watch an entire dinner service or something? Or?
Yes and no. No, not an entire dinner service. That would be gawking.
I think it would be interesting if it was like in the kitchens. You know, you were watching like a restaurant.
It's in the public area. No, they don't have that.
See, I have a problem with hearing people eat. So even just watching them and imagining the noise would probably bother me. I can't watch people eat either. Yeah. It's very problematic. It's made dinners with my wife very difficult.
But here's the thing. So I'm watching this outside cafe in Miami Beach. It just opened up again a few days ago because of the thing. So yeah. it opened up, so, and it all has to be outside. And of course, Miami Beach, most of the restaurants have this outside cafe thing, and that's where the camera happens to be. And I'm watching the waiters walking around, and I'm thinking, I'm fascinating. How are they going to handle this thing where they're outside? What happens? The waiters have the masks on, and they have the gloves on. But I'm seeing them walk out to the tables carrying plates with their gloved hands and carrying water glasses out and holding up the cup and pouring it. I'm thinking, my God, this is, if anybody saw this, they'd shut the place down. they're touching the rims of the glasses. They got their, I mean, well, they're not changing their gloves every 2 seconds or washing their hands. I'm like, oh my God, this is wrong. This looks wrong. And I got very nervous about that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm, in other words, go on.
I don't know that I'd yet be ready to be served.
Yeah,
get something takeout now. All the food comes out of the packages, goes onto a separate plate. Everybody washes their hands.
I understand.
Everything gets thrown in the trash.
I understand.
Yeah, but to have someone handling my stuff more directly, I'm not sure I'm ready for that yet.
I mean, by the time the food gets, I mean, even if someone's packing the stuff, you know, and their food's on the carton, okay, fine. They're not touching your food. I don't know what's happening in the kitchen. I guess it's all right. I don't know. But having a waiter actually take their gloved fingers, which has touched many other things already, the rim of the plate, then I take my fork and I eat off of the rim of that plate or drink, put my lips to the water glass. I don't think I'm ready for it either, John.
Well, one of my understandings, and I know we're not talking about this, but one of my understandings is that it's not something that can be ingested and happen. And also, you kind of have to, I mean, eventually you have to kind of come out from under and kind of run with the idea that although there are a good number of people that went through it or, maybe asymptomatic or whatever, it's not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of have to hope, I think, that, you know, for the place that you've decided to go eat, they have some kind of standards in place that, you know, like, I mean, are they taking the temperatures of every employee that comes in? Are they, you know, very strict about if you feel even a little sick, don't come in?
That's my point. That's my point. You because I am a very untrusting individual, always have been, goes along with the gas. And I can't trust that they're doing everything by the recommended book. By the way, this part probably won't be in the show. But
I'll leave it in. We can talk about it for a second.
Promise I wouldn't.
I know, but still.
Anyway.
Sometimes you're concerned. You know, and plus, if they're in Croatia, it doesn't matter because it's not a real place anyway. So.
It's Web Plaza, man. Everybody, give it a shot. It's fascinating. Find it fascinating. I love being a fly on the wall. You know, people always say that if I were a fly on the wall, I could just watch what people do. It's a fascinating thing. I don't know why, but it is.
Well, plus, if you were a fly on the wall, you'd have like 1,000 eyes to watch.
That would be be free.
So you can watch even more.
You're right.
Because you're a fly.
Well, okay. All right, you took that a little too literally. Do you ever like sit on a park bench when you're really totally bored? God, I sound really boring, don't I? You sit on a park bench and there's like a couple and then some people and there's a bum and there's a couple of girls sitting there. And you just sit there. You try not to stare at them. But you just, it's the same thing as the live cams. You're just looking at people's lives and what they're doing.
Well, as a writer person, that's kind of a standard exercise for me because when I used to teach writing, I would tell people that, you know, tell my students that as a writer, everything that you observe is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's yours to use as you want. And you can, you know, you can take the story as it is, as you see it, or you can use it as a stepping off point for, you know, for something, you know, different, wherever you want to end up taking it, you know, so you can always extrapolate out. If you see people sitting on a bench and you don't understand why they're there or what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But as a writer, if you get an idea in your head that they're talking about a certain thing, then that's like a stepping off point to play that game of, you know, where do we go with this?
Right.
And when I used to do this as an exercise with my classes, I remember as an example, one night we're in class and someone went, you know, walking past the door to the classroom. And we were talking about this very thing. And I said, where's that guy going? And someone said, he's on his way to work. And I pointed to someone else and said, where does he work? And, you know, and so it was a chain of questions. And by the time this poor guy had left our site and headed out to wherever the parking lot had gone, as I recall, he was a cross-dressing man who worked at the perfume counter at Jordan Marsh because it gave him money because he liked the perfumes. and he was planning to come out to his wife as a crossdresser.
Wow.
And probably it was just the janitor heading to dump some trash. But when you play, when you go with that exercise, yeah, and you just what if, like what next, that, kids, is how magic happens. So what you're talking about, I do all the time.
Yeah. Wow. This is like an education for kids. I know the show is so educational.
That's right. They just learned about crossdressers.
No, not that part. When I was dating, when I was a young adult.
In the '40s. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the 2040s. We would sit down on a park bench and do what I'm talking about. But this works with the girls. This works with the girls and girls. This works with the guys. It's a little game you play. You sit on the bench with this, you know, trying to get to know somebody. You're on your first date or something. You're sitting on a bench and you see a couple on the bench facing you on the other side of the sidewalk in the park. And you play that game just as you described, Johnny. Let's try to figure out what their lives are like.
Yep.
I bet he's a thing, and I bet she's probably married to him. They've been married for 5 years. But you go back and forth with the person that you're sitting next to, and all of a sudden you got something going. You got creativity. You got a relationship going. You're starting to bond. It's a great first date kind of thing. Bring them to a park,
and you're probably laughing.
Yeah.
Someone once told me. This guy used to work with used to tell me that his perfect first date was always to take a woman to a comedy club. Because no matter what else she remembered about that night, she'll remember that when she was with you, she was laughing.
Yeah.
And he was right. Like, it's an aphrodisiac. I'm like, oh, okay.
You're absolutely right. That's a good point. Yeah. You don't have to get into anything. And everybody looks good when they're happy. And when you're laughing,
I've often said, Ron, mm-hmm. I've often said, to be quite honest, if I didn't have the ability to make people laugh as I do, mm-hmm. and you know I do, mm-hmm. I would still be a virgin.
Okay. I didn't know where you were going, but cool.
That sense of humor, boy, worked every time.
Yeah, but the girls love that, man.
They do.
The girls love that, man. They do.
And the boys. No, I'm sorry. Cross-dressing.
Whatever. Well, this has been fascinating. It has been educational and informative. And
it's gone all over the place.
It really has.
Even Croatia.
And now I'm going to turn all my furniture over and see if it's an original Jesus. I got something to do now, tomorrow.
Well, and you know, as the weekend approaches, mm-hmm. don't forget those yard sales.
Right. Yeah.
Go to the junk house.
Well, I don't know if I haven't seen as many as when I was back then. I don't see them as much as I used to. A lost art, ladies and gentlemen.
It's because all the 8-tracks are gone and no one has them to sell anymore.
Oh, my God. The romance of wobbly music. Mm.
Right.
Cannot.
Kept that matchbook in the car, the one that was only for holding the tape up.
Millennials, what you missed.
You don't know.
I'll tell you. Well, he's John Shanahan. You want to lead us into the thing?
I certainly do, Ron, because you've been drinking with Mr. Shanahan. Cue the theme.
And now we're drinking with Mr. Shanahan. Drinking on the phone. Drinking with Mr. Shanahan so he don't have to drink alone again.
Well, you have been duly anointed by our presence for today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, oh, I wish you peace. I really do. Nothing like a little Mormon Tabernacle Choir to end a program. Come on, sing along. You know the words. Remember the can-can? I wasn't brought up that way. To me, this is the can't-can't. Not funny, but true.